we'll have our reading, please. If Christine.
We will have our reading, but in a few moments. Yep. Is that any better? No? Perhaps we'll bring this one back.
How's that? Is that one working? Good.
Yes, we'll have our reading
in a few moments. Good morning. Sorry about that stuttering start. I wonder if any of you saw a list that was published recently of the 10 best places to live in the UK. Is that now working, Dick? Is this one working? No? Any better?
Yes, no?
This one's working.
Is that one working?
Thank you, Trevor. Shall we start again? I wonder if any of you saw a list that was published recently of the 10 best places to live in the UK. Rayleigh wasn't on it. But there was a corresponding list of the 10 worst places to live in the UK. Rayleigh wasn't on that one either. But I suspect the people who compiled that second list of the 10 worst places had never actually tried to get across the Weir at 8:30 on a wet Monday morning. Did you know that the word Weir can mean a dam, but it can also mean a blockage, which I think shows remarkable foresight on the part of whoever called it Rayleigh Weir all those years ago? But there is something of a craze at the moment for lists, isn't there? You can look on the internet and there's loads of them. You can get books out of the library, books of lists and so on. And I just looked up a few of them as a reminder. You can get a list of the 10 longest novels. Not sure why you'd want that list. There is apparently a list of the 10 worst behaved teachers, would you believe? Faye, I don't think you're on there anywhere. But there's a list of the top 10 most ridiculously overpriced gifts. There's also a list of the 10 most pointless baby products. And then there is a list of the 10 weirdest surgical procedures, but I don't think we'll go any further with that one. Then there's the famous record list radio program, Desert Island Discs. And I, like many others, I've got my list of 8 records already sorted for the day that I get the call from the BBC. As I was thinking about our theme for this morning, it struck me that if anyone ever made a list of the Old Testament blockbusters, a sort of Old Testament's greatest hits, then this one would be right up there with the likes of Noah's Ark and Crossing the Red Sea, Samson and Delilah, and David and Goliath. Because today we're looking at Daniel in the Lion's Den, which has to be one of the classics of the Old Testament. But there's special significance to the passage relating to this story, which we will be reading in a moment, because it represents the final account that we have of the life of Daniel. Because from here on in, the nature of this book changes. Chapters 1 to 6 that we've been looking at over the past few weeks give us an account of Daniel's life. Whereas from chapter 7 onwards, that describes a series of visions and prophecies that God gave to Daniel at different stages in his life. Visions and prophecies in part concerning the end times and sitting alongside some of the material in the book of Revelation. Now, I'm very pleased to say, and I expect you are too, that we're not going to venture into those areas this morning. Other people will be taking us there over the next few weeks, and may God bless them as they do so. Instead, we're going to be looking at this story and how, in effect, it sums up Daniel's life as it's been revealed to us in the preceding chapters. You will remember that when we first met Daniel back in chapter 1, he was a young man, probably mid to late teens, who had been carried away with other Jews from their home in Jerusalem by King Nebuchadnezzar. He was put into service in the royal palace in Babylon, and now some 60 or 70 years have passed by. Daniel's probably around about 80 years old. That's even older than I am. Nebuchadnezzar's long gone, and his successor, a guy called Belshazzar, remember the writing on the wall that we thought about a few weeks ago? He's gone as well. And Babylon has been conquered by the Medes and the Persians, with Darius taking over as ruler. Now, Paul Wheeler set the scene for us on this last week. Very briefly, Darius has appointed 120 officials and three key administrators to help him run the province. Daniel is one of those administrators, and Darius is so impressed with him that he plans to set him over the whole kingdom, second only to himself. This, of course, gets right up the noses of the other officials and administrators, so much so that they set out to discredit Daniel in the eyes of Darius. But they're unable to do so. They realize that the only way they can get at Daniel is if they do so through his faith in God, a key part of which is his prayer life. So these guys go to Darius and they play on his pride by persuading him to issue a decree that for the next 30 days, anyone who prays to any god or any person other than Darius should be thrown into a den of lions. Darius, of course, loves having his ego massaged in this way, and so he's happy to go along with the idea. Now, needless to say, this decree matters not one bit to Daniel. Even the threat of death, and a pretty horrible death at that, can't come between him and his God. So Daniel simply continues his prayer life as before, and he makes no attempt at all to hide it. This gives his enemies just the chance that they need. They sidle up to Darius and they say, "O king, did you not say that for the next 30 days, anyone who prays other than to you will be thrown to the lions?" "That's right," says Darius. "That's the law." "Well," they say, "guess what?" And they spill the beans about Daniel. Now, Darius, of course, realizes how he's been tricked, and he's determined that Daniel should not be thrown to the lions. But these sneaky officials are having none of it. They point out that the law is the law after all, and nothing can be done to change it. And that's where we finished last week. It's a bit like an episode of EastEnders or Coronation Street. It's a cliffhanger. How on earth is our hero going to get out of this one? So, let's pick up the story where we left off.
So we pick up the story, Daniel chapter 6, and starting at verse 16. So the king gave the order, and they brought Daniel and threw him into the lion's den. The king said to Daniel, "May your God, whom you serve continually, rescue you." A stone was brought and placed over the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the rings of his nobles, so that Daniel's situation might not be changed. Then the king returned to his palace and spent the night without eating and without any entertainment being brought to him, and he could not sleep. At the first light of dawn, the king got up and hurried to the lion's den. When he came near the den, he called to Daniel in an anguished voice, "Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to rescue you from the lions?" Daniel answered, "May the king live forever. My God sent his angel, and he shut the mouths of the lions. They have not hurt me because I was found innocent in his sight, nor have I ever done any wrong before you, your majesty." The king was overjoyed and gave orders to lift Daniel out of the den. And when Daniel was lifted from the den, no wound was found on him because he had trusted in his God. At the king's command, the men who had falsely accused Daniel were brought in and thrown into the lion's den along with their wives and children. And before they reached the floor of the den, the lions overpowered them and crushed all their bones. Then King Darius wrote to all the nations and peoples of every language in all the earth, "May you prosper greatly. I issue a decree that in every part of my kingdom, people must fear and reverence the God of Daniel. For he is the living God, and he endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed. His dominion will never end. He rescues and he saves. He performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on the earth. He has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions." So Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian.
Thank you, Christine. Are we on? Good. So there we have it. Darius reluctantly agrees with his so-called advisers, and he gives the order. But at the same time, almost in a kind of prayer, he asks that Daniel's God will deliver him. Indeed, he is so troubled, we're told, that that night he can't even eat or sleep. We're told also, not only that, but he even declines his usual nighttime entertainment being brought to him. But I think we'll leave the interpretation of that bit to the imagination. First thing next morning, Darius rushes off to the lion's den and he cries out in an anguished voice, "Daniel, Daniel, please tell me your God has saved you." Note, he doesn't just say, "Please tell me you're okay." But he says, "Please tell me that you have been saved by your God." It seems that this guy Darius is already recognizing that this God who Daniel serves really is someone special. Maybe even the real thing. But we'll come to that later. And of course, to Darius's relief, back comes Daniel's response. "Fear not, I am alive. My God has saved me." In fact, what he actually says is, "My God sent his angel and he shut the mouths of the lions," which itself reflects words from Psalm 91. Because in Psalm 91, we've got these verses. "If you say the Lord is my refuge and you make the Most High your dwelling, no harm will overtake you. No disaster will come near your tent. And this is the bit, for he will command his angels concerning you to guard you in all your ways. They will lift you up in their hands so you will not strike your foot against a stone. You will tread on the lion and the cobra. You will trample the great lion and the serpent. Now that psalm was very likely to be found in the Hebrew Book of Praise, which Daniel may well have drawn strength and comfort from throughout his time, his exile in Babylon. And here it was being fulfilled, those words being fulfilled in a miraculous way in his own experience, because he said, God sent his angel and he shut the mouths of the lions. The king, of course, is overjoyed and he gets Daniel out of the lion's den straight away, before ordering that those who had tricked him, who'd falsely accused Daniel, should take his place. Not only them, but their wives and children's too. And we are told that before they even hit the floor, they were dead. So let it not be said that Daniel survived because the lions were not hungry that night. Clearly they were. Daniel survived because God miraculously saved him. And then we have an amazing conclusion to this chapter. Darius writes to all the nations and peoples of every language in all the earth. And he says this, may you prosper greatly. I issue a decree that in every part of my kingdom, people must fear and reverence the God of Daniel. For he is the living God, and he endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed. His dominion will never end. He rescues and he saves. He performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on the earth. He has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions. They are astonishing words from a man who was one of the most powerful in the world. Because there's a line of thought that says that actually Darius, who doesn't appear in any of the records of the Persian Empire, may well have been Cyrus, the ruler of the whole empire. Verse 28 at the end of this chapter says, Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian. But that can equally well be translated as, Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius, that is, the reign of Cyrus. This man had undergone a dramatic conversion from a heathen ruler to a believer in the one true God. And there's a major significance to that. Getting deeper for a moment into Old Testament history, and please stay with me because it won't take long. In the first chapter of the book of Ezra in the Old Testament, we learn that very, very soon after these events, Cyrus, the ruler of the whole Persian Empire, issued a decree that the Israelites could return to Jerusalem, which, if you remember, was where Nebuchadnezzar had removed them from some 70 years before, which, of course, was how Daniel and the fellow Jews ended up in Babylon in the first place. Thus, the whole return of the Jews from exile back to their homeland, which then enabled the prophecies concerning the birth of Jesus to be fulfilled, may well have resulted from this man, Darius or Cyrus, turning to God. Isn't that amazing? The whole of history could have been hinged on these events. And how did that come about? Through the faithfulness of Daniel, who was prepared to face death rather than
to compromise. What a hero Daniel was. One of the greatest heroes in the Bible. Possibly even in history. What a great and brilliant guy Daniel was. And yet I suspect that if Daniel was able to walk through those doors this morning and come and stand here at the front, I reckon he would reject any notion whatsoever of his being a hero. Why? Because I believe he would point straight to God as being the real hero of this story. Indeed, the real hero of the whole book. Daniel knew that it was God who enabled him and his mates to stand firm over their diet when they first arrived in Babylon. Daniel knew that it was God who gave him the interpretation of Nebuchadnezzar's dream. All these things we've been thinking about over the past few weeks. Daniel knew it was God who had kept Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego safe in a blazing furnace. It was God who revealed to him the meaning of Nebuchadnezzar's second dream. It was God who'd enabled him to interpret the writing on the wall, which, if you remember, predicted to Belshazzar the end of Babylon's empire that very night. And of course, it was God who'd kept Daniel safe in the lion's den. This is the God who was finally proclaimed by Darius, the living God, the God who endures forever, whose kingdom will never be destroyed, whose dominion will never end, the God who rescues and who saves, and who performs signs and wonders in heaven and on earth. And he is our God today. Whatever goes on in this world around about us, events of the past week, events in other parts of the world, he remains our God today. The living God who endures forever. The God who is the same today as he was yesterday and he will be tomorrow. The very same God who we serve and worship. And so as we get that bit into perspective, what then does this passage have to teach us about this God and about ourselves? One of the things we've learned as we've gone through the book of Daniel is its relevance from all those years ago to the world in which we live today. Maybe some people face a tough situation at work, possibly with an awkward or even a bullying boss. Maybe some of us are victims of jealousy, leading to false accusations being made against us. Maybe we live or we work in a situation where, because of our beliefs, we are totally at odds with the culture around about us. Perhaps we're single, perhaps we're lonely. Maybe some of us are getting on in years, and perhaps we're no longer as fit or as able as we once were. Or maybe the pressures of life itself simply crowd in on us and it all becomes just too much to bear. Well, as we reflect on the life of Daniel, in one way or another, we can see that he faced all of those challenges and more. Now, none of us will ever face the precise situations that Daniel did, but we can see the essence of them day in and day out in our own lives. A pressure to conform, to be like everyone else, because it's so much easier. a pressure to worship idols, not in the form of 90-foot statues and the like, but in the form of security, wealth, possessions, status, to name just a few. If your idol isn't in that list, then just write it in a gap somewhere. Or maybe we do face lions, just as Daniel did. Not physical lions, but as those lions threaten to devour Daniel, maybe there are things which today are threatening to devour us. In Peter's letter in the New Testament, he reminds us that our enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, looking for someone to devour. Could he be threatening to devour you today? Perhaps through fear, through anxiety, through worries, maybe through a sin that you have struggled with for as long as you can remember, and it still overwhelms. Maybe through jealousy, maybe anger, that you fear one day you will simply no longer be able to control and you dread the consequences. Or maybe simply the sheer pressures of life are threatening to devour you this morning. Throughout his whole life, Daniel trusted God absolutely. And God never once let him down. I have a book at home which is entitled In God We Trust, But Only as a Last Resort. Could that be true of you, of me, this morning? We profess to trust God wholeheartedly, but in reality, do we do so only when all else has failed? Let's read again that confession of Darius. For he is the living God, and he endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed. His dominion will never end. He rescues and he saves. He performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on the earth. He has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions. I wonder, can you this morning put your name in the place of Daniel's and say, he has rescued me from the power of the lions? Because you can, if, like Daniel, you are willing to put your total trust in him. Because he is the God who rescues and the God who saves. Amen. If Trev and the band would like to come up. We're going to close with a song that we have sung quite a lot recently, but I make no apology for choosing it again this morning because I think it fits in so very well with our theme. The song is, of course, Our God is a Lion, and it includes the lines, He is roaring with power. He is fighting our battles. And if you are in a battle this morning, remember He is fighting for you. And as we sing these words, let's trust him as Daniel did. Let's stand and sing. Every knee will bow before him, for he is the living God. And he endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed. His dominion will never end. He rescues and he saves. He performs signs and wonders in the heaven and on the earth, and he has rescued us from the power of the lions. Thank you, Father. To God be the glory. Amen.